Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the sort of young, kind of hip, but certainly lay editors of America Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news. I am joined by Zach Davis.
Hello.
And Olga Segura.
Hi, guys.
How you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Zach, you've sound bad.
You know,
sounded better.
Yeah, I'm gonna sanitize this mic when I'm done. I've been out with a bad cold. Maybe I don't know, just kind of feverish. But I'm gonna come back like Jordan for like when Jordan had the flu.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna make this podcast recording.
That's a really high bar you just set for yourself.
You know, I perform at a high level, Olga. So very excited to be here, stuffed up or not.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. All right, so later in our show, we're going to talk to Katie McKenna. She's the author of the book, How to Get Run Over by a Truck.
Which I feel like I got run over by a truck. I'm probably going to make that joke to her.
Yeah. I'm sure she'll take it in stride. So her book, it's a memoir about literally getting run over by an 18-wheeler. and it's really great. It is not a preachy or specifically Christian book, but it touches on a lot of matters that I think will be interesting to people of faith.
But if it preaches anything, it's that I'm never going to ride my bike in Brooklyn again.
Yes. Yeah, that's the lesson of it overall.
Yeah. So yes, we'll be talking to Katie, and then we'll have Consolations and Desolations, where we talk about where we found God this week. But first, we have Signs of the Times, the part of the show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week, so you don't have to. So we're going to start with some bad news first at Jesuit schools. Gonzaga lost in the championship of the NCAA.
Which was total garbage. I didn't even get to watch it because I was just asleep.
Why is that? That sounds like a personal problem.
It was.
Yeah, that's a you problem.
And I may have lost my bracket pool in my men's group at church. So
I'm sorry. Well, I had Gonzaga going all the way, and I still won my bracket. I guess I was just much stronger in the earlier rounds than you.
Yeah, no, I lost. I lost my bracket. And by my bracket, I mean shout out to Brian Dillon, whose bracket I copied and who ultimately failed me, but thank you. Okay. Anyways.
Well, so Gonzaga was defeated 71-65 against the University of North Carolina. It was still the furthest the Jesuit school had ever made it in the NCAA tournament, so that's something.
Oh, yeah. Well, furthest that Gonzaga made it.
Yeah. This Jesuit school.
Yes, yeah. This Jesuit school. That's all right.
In other Jesuit basketball news, Georgetown University.
I feel like we're just becoming a Jesuit basketball
it's
news
literally
service.
What we're about now.
It's March. It's fine. Yeah. Georgetown University announced this week that they would be bringing on Patrick Ewing as its new head coach. He's replacing George Thompson III, whose father, George Thompson Jr., recruited Ewing back in the 80s, and he was kind of their star player, so he's coming back to
I have heard of this
Hoyas.
Patrick Ewing before.
Have you?
Yes.
Yeah, shout out to him. He's like my favorite Knicks player of all time. Got into basketball thanks to him.
Kind of sad though, because he's really led you in a terrible direction to be a Knicks fan.
I mean, yes, but you know, I'm also a Spurs fan, so I kind of cheat with my Knicks love. So, sorry, New York.
All right. In other Georgetown news, the school announced the date that it'll be renaming two of its buildings. So there are these two buildings on campus named after Jesuit priest who had been involved in selling slaves back in the 1800s.
Had been involved in selling slaves?
So, literally sold slaves.
Okay, all right.
Let's be super clear about that.
Yes.
Creative use of language.
May have.
Yes. They actually sold 272 women, children, and men in order to save the university from financial ruin.
Against the Vatican's wishes, against the province's wishes.
And yet their names had been on these buildings for the past 200 years or so. But on April 18th, there will be a ceremony in which the buildings are renamed for Isaac Hawkins, who was the first person on the list of people that they sold, and Anne Marie Beecraft, who was a teacher and free woman of color who set up one of the first schools for African Americans in Washington, D.C. So good on you, Georgetown. And moving from academia to the media, Bill O'Reilly, the most famous Catholic on the Fox News Network, is in some trouble over allegations of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior towards his female colleagues. So five women have come forward and over the years, and Fox and O'Reilly have paid out $13 million to keep them quiet. So now more than 20 companies have pulled their advertisements from his show. But he's got some high-profile supporters, a.k.a. President Trump, who has come out and said that, "I think he's a person I know well. He's a good person. I don't think Bill did anything wrong." So high praise from the president.
I find it funny that the thing that always tanks guys like this is advertising, right? So, like, the ethical bar in this country is whether or not you can convince someone in ad PR whether, like, if something was moral or not.
Well, not even just advertising, but big business. So, like, with the North Carolina bathroom bill, mm-hmm. the reason that got repealed was because the NCAA pulled the tournament from North Carolina because of their stance on transgender bathrooms.
But even then, like, the person you have to convince is this is a terrible thing is the public relations person for mm-hmm. that company. Right. So you can convince them. You can probably, you know, get whatever you want. But
yeah. So what's our next story, Zach?
Next story comes out of Chicago, where Cardinal Blaise Cupich has announced the creation of a new anti-violence initiative with the support of Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. Cardinal Cupich announced that he's going to use $250,000 from his discretionary charitable fund to create a new foundation to fund anti-violence programs throughout Chicago. And he said this at a press conference where he read a personal handwritten letter from Pope Francis. The Pope exhorted Chicago's young people to follow the example of Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "Walking the path of peace is not always easy, but is the only authentic response to violence. I pray that the people of your beautiful city never lose hope, that they work together to become builders of peace, showing future generations the true power of love." Which was really moving to think that the Pope is paying attention to what's going on in Chicago.
Right. And it's significant because it came on the anniversary of MLK's assassination.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the first time that Pope Francis has quoted Martin Luther King. When he spoke to Congress, he was one of the three people that Pope Francis lifted up as kind of moral guides for the United States.
So Cardinal Cupich said that if we don't do this as a church, then we might as well pack up, that this is what we should be doing. We should be with people who are in need. And among the programs that the Archdiocese says it's committed to providing and building up, they're also going to engage a revitalized youth program implementing a robust anti-racism component to religious education classes, the construction of a new job training center, and the launch of a program for youth from around the city to dialogue about ways to combat violence in the city. So this is coming at a time when, you know, you've got Cardinal Cupich really leaning in. You've got Chance the Rapper really leaning in. He's donating $1 million to fund arts programs in the schools. So I'm praying for Chicago. This is a city where I went to school and spent a lot of time in, so it's good to see that the Pope and Cardinal Cupich are looking that way too.
And now we are joined by Katie McKenna. She's the author of How to Get Run Over by a Truck, a memoir about it's pretty self-explanatory.
it's not just like a very clever title.
Yeah, very literal. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so delighted to be here.
Can I jump in with the first question?
Sure. Yes.
So I'm getting over a sickness, and I told someone that, you know, I woke up feeling like I got ran over by a truck. Do you take offense to that?
I totally don't, because I think that, I mean, like, because it is, the fact that it's a turn of phrase and it's something that did actually happen to me blows my mind, because I used to say it, like, right. I would absolutely say, oh my God, I feel like I got run over by a truck, you know, and then I actually was, and I was like, this is serious, like, I'm throwing this around way too liberally, but it definitely doesn't offend me, unless someone's like, oh, it really threw me under the truck on that one, I'm like, that must have been painful, you know, like, but it's totally not, I'm not offended, I get it, because you do feel like that.
Yeah, well, as far as I know, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Your pain is your pain. I'm not here to judge it. Aww, you know, that's not my place.
So this accident happened almost 10 years ago, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure, yeah. It was October 2nd, 2007, and I usually either did like a 5-mile run or a 10-mile bike rides in the morning. And I was closing out a 10-mile bike ride, and it was a really gorgeous, you know, beginning of fall sort of a morning where everything felt crisp and new and fresh and gorgeous. And I just wanted to kind of ride out and see the sunrise. And I was going down this one block, and I was at a stoplight, and there was a truck on my left and a black Mazda behind that truck, and both of them had their indicators off, so I thought they were both going straight, and I was going to be making a right for that sunrise. And as I went, when the light turned green, unfortunately, the truck was turning, and I'd gone super wide because I thought I had a ton of space, and I didn't. So I was run over by 8 wheels of this 18-wheeler.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, Lord.
Yeah.
I have to say, at first, I loved the book.
Oh, you're so
it's
kind.
Really
so
great. I mean, to be honest, I, you know, when you describe getting run over by an 18, like, I was like physically.
It's really, I know. And it was a big, I did describe it a lot, which sometimes, like, I'll go to readings or something, and I'm reading out loud, and I'm like, that's very uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for me to say. I'm sure it's like really weird for people to read. But because I did break all of my ribs and fracture my pelvis in 5 places, and I was conscious the whole time, which is what sort of makes it a very different experience, is that I was aware of everything as it was happening.
For me, like, I thought it was like a really good take on the near-death experience Christian story, because so often those are kind of like pat, like, I almost died and I saw God. And
exactly.
But yours is like, I almost died and I was awake the whole time. And this is what it was like.
Exactly. Like, there could have been a light, but I wasn't sure because I refused to close my eyes.
Yeah. And it's just so real.
That's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. You talk about how you were, there were all these signs the day of, you know, that sort of God was sending you. And I found it, like Ashley mentioned, it was very real, especially for me, the part where you were kind of like, my mother always told me wear a clean pair of underwear because my mother always told me that. Yes. She'd be like, you might get in an accident and you have to be wearing a clean pair of underwear.
Exactly, because you'll be embarrassed.
Right. And I always thought, this is really strange. And then I read your book and I was like, oh my God, my mom has a point. So
your mom was totally on top of it. And like, it took my mom like a couple months before she did a little bit of finger wagging of being like, I told you, like, you know, like, you should have done that. But I will. And it was embarrassing. Like, of all the things that were on my mind in that moment, I was absolutely mortified. Like, I shouldn't have been. They didn't care. But I was like, oh, hey, about my tush. Like, then, like, they were not interested at all.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. But the shame that goes into that.
Exactly.
The vulnerability. You talk a lot about
I think
the vulnerability.
That's such a good insight. You're exactly right. I think that that's the biggest thing is, you know, when you're in your early to mid-20s, you're invincible. There is very little that you don't think that you can do and that you've, you know, that you're kind of sailing along. And the idea that you at any juncture could be vulnerable, more specifically, like in the most personal way that you can be, which is, number one, the idea of, like, that you're vulnerable to mortality, that you are a human person. And then also, it within, like, having no clothes on is the most vulnerable that you can be. And you're like, oh, gosh, it's strangers. This is horrifying. Just so bad.
Now, something I found interesting is that you just immediately sort of turned to a Hail Mary, right?
Oh,
when you
absolutely.
Thought you were gonna die. Can you talk us through what that
of
was
course.
Like?
Of course. What had happened is that I felt so alone and so afraid, and I felt so desperate for that feeling of familiarity and family and comfort. And I'd asked the woman who was there, I remember my phone number, so she called my mom, but my mom wasn't present and I wasn't able to pick up the phone, understandably. And saying the Hail Mary made me feel like my mom was there, or that there was someone or something there to comfort me. It made me feel like I was home in this way that was unbelievably comforting and important. And it made me feel really close to God in that moment when I knew that I was kind of on the razor's edge.
I mean, I think there's a good chance your mom probably threw up a couple Hail Marys when
she
found out, right?
Oh, she did. Oh, big time. My parents talk all the time about the idea that Mary is who saved me. They feel very strongly about that. And my mom is actually Episcopalian, but my father is Catholic. Mm-hmm. But my dad taught my mom how to say the Hail Mary. So when they were in the hospital, they were saying Hail Marys, and my brother and my father were going really, really fast. And my mom was like, please, slow down.
Well, I remember being taught as a kid, like, if you, like, heard any sirens going by, just, like, throw up a couple Hail Marys, and then, like, God and Mary will distribute those to where they need to go. Like, you don't have to know what's going on, but there's some kind of, like, unifying presence in, like, these prayers that we're all taught as children that we can turn to. So I found that really moving.
And we're talking a lot about, you know, prayer and how that played into your injury, but I wouldn't say this is a preachy book by any means, but what I loved about it was that it wasn't preachy, but it still grappled with, like, really big moral questions that all Christians grapple with. One of them being, like, the problem of evil. Why do bad things happen to good people?
Absolutely.
And I was wondering if you could read a passage where you kind of, like, touch on that.
For sure.
Okay, cool.
In the weeks since I had been admitted to the hospital, many people wanted to talk to me about my faith. They wanted to know if I felt stronger about God now that I had been saved. For their sake, I said that I did. That I couldn't believe how lucky I was that God had spared me. I didn't want them to know what was actually going on in my head. I thought that God had forgotten me. The accident made me lose faith, not gain it. The pain that I was in was unbearable, and it never stopped. It was like living in a pain hurricane. It hit me from all angles. I used to be able to run a mile in 5 minutes and 18 seconds. Now I couldn't even lift my legs. What kind of God would let that happen to a nice girl like me? I tried to go on a break from God for a few days. I decided to give him the silent treatment. I got through the day just fine, but like a needy girlfriend, I was praying to him every night. He was the only person I knew would be up. And even though I was mad at any God who had let this happen to me, I was grateful to have someone to talk to.
Yeah. One of my favorite sentences was, after the accident and recovery, you say, I didn't have the patience for rose-colored glasses. Now was the time for truth and a very fierce sense of hopefulness, which seems like I love that phrase, fierce sense of hopefulness. So, like, what's the difference between just being having rose-colored glasses and being optimistic and thinking everything's going to be okay and having fierce hopefulness?
I think that what I found is that you have to be aggressive about joy. You cannot assume that it will come to you or that you are deserving of it, or that if you do the right things, if you talk to the right people, if you smile enough, if you're friendly enough, if you work hard enough, that joy will just come to you and happiness will be something that you deserve. The way that I feel about, like, the idea of fierce hopefulness is it cannot be beaten out of you. It cannot go away on a bad day. You have to be aggressive about it and you have to be willing to fight for it. And that is not easy. That is not simple. But when you get there and you find yourself in that space of hope, it is more beautiful than you ever anticipated. It is not that easy hope. That hard, hard-wrought hope and joy are beyond anything that I ever anticipated for myself. That's what I think is, like, that we can do for ourselves is when you fight for it.
So this Sunday is Palm Sunday,
yes,
which is where, you know, we read the account of Jesus' crucifixion and passion. Did anyone ever ask you to, like, connect with Jesus' suffering on this and to look at it that way? Because the way you were just speaking about it had a very Christian lens on suffering.
Interestingly enough, unfortunately, I had two additional health scares this past year. Two, like, cancer scares, which is, you know, awesome for a strong, you know, 34-year-old, because my life has been super easy. So that was really hard. And my cousin, who's one of my closest friends, Kelly, she started to cry and she was really upset. And she was like, don't you think that God would just say that you've had enough? Don't you think that like, aren't you full? You deserve just easiness. And I was like, Kelly, God gave up his only son for us. He watched him suffer, and in such a deep and serious way, for all of us, for our sins, so that we can, you know, that we can join God and that we can go to heaven. I have no right to say to God, I don't deserve this. The only thing that I can hope is that I can take it and turn it into something that is worthwhile and that is bigger than me. I think that that's the only hope that I have. And sometimes that's how I try to see the suffering, and other times the suffering, I'm just like, I eat like a giant bowl of buttered pasta and I'm like, being me is so hard. And then other times I try to just find a way to think of it in a more joyful space.
I love you end the book talking about this new ritual you have yeah. where you appropriately enough go to the spot of the accident with is it champagne or
is it champagne okay. when we call it F the T.
Yeah. And I don't know, it seemed Catholic to me to like make yeah. a ritual of it, like mark this place. So was that your idea?
And it was
and
actually.
What did you get out
yeah.
of that?
It was so what we were in the hospital and something that I will say, if you ever have a friend who goes through trauma and that they're in a space where they're kind of like in a sticking point, a thing that's so helpful and meaningful is to make future plans with them. Because it's hard to remember that you will have a life outside of whatever your reality is. And my family was like, well, what do you want to do when you get out of the hospital? What do you think you'd want to do on the anniversary? And I was like, I don't want to be afraid of that place. I don't. I really, really don't. And I would like to say, you know, for us, it was F the cheese. So that's what we called it, to F the truck. And that was what we did. I was like, I want to go there and I don't want to be scared. I don't want to be sad. I want to celebrate the fact that I fought hard and we banded together and we decided that we were going to try to be bigger than this and fight harder than we could and be stronger than we thought. And that's the part to remember. We can't forget that when there is sadness, when there is trauma, that there's also strength and there's also joy. And we can't not look it straight in the face, I think. I think that's been the most important thing. And the idea of the celebration, so we would get up at 6. Like my parents, I grew up on Long Island and I live in Brooklyn, but my parents have retired in Vermont. And now they are driving 4 hours down to this corner, like this really busy, creepy corner in Williamsburg. Like it was super industrial. My older brother last year, he's an investment banker. He came on his way to the airport. And it's amazing to just have that moment to remember it, to appreciate each other. And what I always do, which is so silly, but I go out and I take a solo cup of champagne, and I go out into the middle of the street where my body was, and I pour out some champagne for old Katie, because you know Mama needs a drink. Like, she's, she doesn't want to be at a party and not have something.
So are you switching it up a little since it's the 10th anniversary this year? Are you going to...
Oh, that's such a good question. So what we did do this past year is mm-hmm. that the book came out on the 4th of October, which is 2 days after the anniversary of the accident. So that was the big thing. We opened the box of books to see it for the first time on the corner. But this year, I don't know. I'm not sure. We should really plan something. I mean, more attention on me, you guys. Yeah. Like, yes. I didn't write a whole book about myself.
We can broadcast live.
Yeah, exactly. Get there.
Jesuitical can record from Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly.
Let us know.
Let's hang out. We always have, like, a very good breakfast afterwards. Like, it is huge.
No, but I had a friend who I went to school in Chicago and got mugged near her home in campus. Yeah. And the first thing she did... like a week after the mugging was like have a picnic with her friends on the spot of the mugging. So, and that always stuck with me is the importance of reclaiming the physical space matters so much because I mean, as much as we like to think that these things transcend, which they do, but like, I don't know, Catholics, as we always talk about physical things mattering, right? So like reclaiming that space has been really important for you.
Yes, absolutely. It's been really, really, really meaningful of thinking of it as a place of, as opposed to a place of trauma, which it definitely is, but also a place where my life was saved and that I was given a deeper understanding of what the world looks like and that I'm very lucky to be alive. There's no part of that that I should ever forget, and going there reminds me of that. But I think I love that idea of reclaiming that space. I think that's gorgeous. I really, really like that. And I think it's also in an interesting way to speak to the Christian piece of it, that we, you know, that we wear crosses and mm-hmm. that we take this thing, this symbol of suffering, and we make it into, we've chosen to say that it's a sign of rebirth. I think that's a really interesting piece. That's so thoughtful. That's great.
So every guest who comes on Jesuitical, we ask them if you can canonize anyone, living or dead, who would it be? And feel free,
Catholic,
like,
or non-Catholic.
Catholic, okay. Non-Catholic, celebrity, non-celebrity, like it's totally, totally open.
Oh, goodness. That is a really good question, and one that suddenly – and I knew this was coming because I've listened to your show, and suddenly I am terrified, just terrified. I would say this sounds – no, because I love her. But I love Cleopatra in this way that is, like, kind of weird. I read this wonderful – like, I just think that she is someone who needs to be lifted up because of her – how she was – she was actually a very faithful person, but within her own religion. But, like – very strong, very thoughtful. And if we can do the same with St. Bridget, can we not just bring Cleopatra into the business?
That's a good question.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely out of left field.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, off. I would highly recommend, if you do have a have a moment, read Cleopatra: A Life.
Okay.
It is fascinating.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having
me. Where can people find your work?
So they can find it. It's right now it's on Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble, and it is also at a lot of independent bookstores. So definitely go in, check, ask them for it.
It's called?
How to Get Run Over by a Truck.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's do some listener mail. What's our first letter, Olga?
So our first email this week comes from Nicholas Frega, who writes that he is a similarly young, questionably hip, and truly late person working in ministry. He is currently working on his master's in theology at Notre Dame and loves our show. So thanks for listening, Nicholas.
Our next letter comes from Zach Gear. Great name, Zach, who just wanted to reach out to us and say that when he came back from college, he had a hard time finding young single Catholics like himself who enjoyed, you know, taking part in the Mass and the sacraments and trying to live as a young Catholic. And so when he found a group of like-minded peers doing a podcast, as he says, he was enthused to listen each week. He said that he especially loves the discernment part at the end of each episode. It's definitely the part that I connect to the easiest, and regardless of whether it's a consolation or desolation, it brings my heart joy that there are others like me searching for God in their everyday experiences.
Oh, man, that's great to hear, Zach, because we're all...
No, it's like really good to hear, because we're struggling to do this, and it's very tough to be vulnerable on air. Mm-hmm. And so to hear that it's connecting with an audience is super helpful, because we are struggling to connect with God in our everyday lives, but we're glad that you're struggling with us.
And we say it at the end of the show, and we really mean it when we say, do tell us where you're finding God in your lives.
It'll help us figure out where we should look.
Next one comes from Anna, who not only loves Disney and the Jesuits, but also listened to us last week and tagged her friend in an email to us. And she also agrees with me and Ashley that Lion King is the undisputed number one Disney film. So shout out to you for that.
Whatever.
And also thank you for spreading the Jesuitical love. You know, we love that you guys listen. So you're awesome. Thanks for supporting us.
And finally, we have Amy Omanya, who wonders what our tolerance for high school student theology is. And I think it's pretty high. I mean, I didn't go to a Jesuit or Catholic high school.
I want to caution you. You're...
Yeah, I'm a product of the public school system.
You don't know. I told Amy that. Having taught CCD, or religious ed, for 3 years, and then having been in a high school youth group, it used to be pretty high, but I probably need a lot of it to just test my limits.
I don't even know what high school student theology means. Like, what do you learn in high school?
That's a great question.
Like, is it like algebra or calculus level theology, or like
I don't even understand
your multiplication tables?
Well, I don't know. I mean, high school was 10 years ago for me, so I'm just kind of relying on Amy to send us some questions and some feedback.
Yeah, so please, yeah,
Amy. If you're a teacher, have your students send us in questions, comments.
And now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was maybe a little bit harder to find God. So what do you have, Zach? Let me guess.
I'm sick. Yeah, and that sucks. But actually, I was thinking about this, and it's the obvious thing for me was to point to the consolation I got from being sick, and you know, all of like that's just lame and horrible, but somehow you've got people checking in on you, you feel the comfort of like little things more. And so I was really feeling consoled by the people in my life who were checking in on me, and just you know, just a little thing like an orange vitamin gummy.
Oh, the gummies.
Yeah,
that's so good.
Those can just like just one of those.
I just eat those in general. So.
No, but also, and then like, you know, talking to my mom and her telling me what medicines I should and should not take was, you know.
Wait, so did you call your mom immediately when you first started feeling sick? That's usually what I do.
No, I should
have. No, he played in a soccer game when he first started feeling sick.
Yeah, I started to feel a little bad on Sunday, and I probably shouldn't have played in our soccer league?
Probably not.
But I played goalie. Badly. So there were 4 shots on goal, 3 goals given up. So.
Is this how you normally play soccer, or is it just because you were sick?
I'm going to say it's because I was sick.
Oh, yeah. Okay, got it. Okay.
All right.
What about you, Olga?
So in past episodes, I've sort of talked about how, you know, I get anxious at work and just anxious in general as a 20-something. So I've recently started running, which has been difficult for me because working out is the worst. But our producer, Wyatt Massey, has been super supportive for the past few weeks. And it's really encouraging to kind of get someone who's kind of like, this is good for you. Even if you don't see it right now, like, just kind of keep pushing. And I literally have moments where I'm like, I'm not going to run. I'm going to sit at my desk and pretend to work. I'm going to sit at my desk and pretend to work until an excuse comes up. And Wyatt's just like, no, just get out there. So that's been my consolation or desolation. I don't know, because my knees hurt. So I also blame Wyatt.
Fair enough.
So Ashley, how about you?
I'm going to kind of piggyback off of Olga in that my consolation actually came while running this morning. So we just talked with Caden McKenna about her very traumatic experience of getting run over by a truck and, you know, losing control over her body. Like, she, you know, she was stuck in a hospital bed for months. And I think I don't know if this is a consolation or desolation, but reading her made me realize, like, how much I took my body for granted. Yeah. I think for a lot of women, it is easy to be critical and negative about your body and take it for granted until you completely lose your control over it. And you're, you know, you just want it to live and function and walk and to walk and be able to lift your hand. So after reading her book last night and then going on a run this morning, I was just like, wow, like, what a privilege to just run. Yeah,
to just be able to get out there and hit that pavement.
Yeah. So I guess that was a consolation.
Yeah. Katie's book is so good. Seriously.
It's really, really good. Like, we're not just doing that because she was our guest this week. It's really that fantastic. Yeah. And it's like Ashley was saying, it's so inspirational. Like,
buy 2 copies.
Yeah. Buy a copy for everyone you know.
All right. Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Wyatt Massey. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ. Adult supervision provided by Carrie Weber and Eloise Blondio. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. That's the best way that we can get out there.
That's leaving it up to the robots. But the easiest way is to just tell your friends about us.
Also, tell your friends about us. Follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show and send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americanmedia.org. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next Friday.